You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We talked about right now one of the big challenges facing the Browns. Certainly the offseason will be bust or screen. Our guy G.I. George says screen went from inconsistent to solid, but not enough to warrant $7 million a year. Happy trails, Buster. And it could just be a price issue. We'll see what happens there. Now we're going to go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline, bring in our good friend, the voice of the Cleveland Browns from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network, Jim Donovan. Jim, how are you?
I am good. Good to be back with you.
Great to be with you. Yesterday's championship games, lots of drama in the first one, no drama in the second, setting up Seahawks. Patriots, what do you think about yesterday's action?
I got to tell you, Nathan, that the first game, the Seattle-Green Bay game, took me right out of my seat. I mean, that was just an incredible finish. You know, it reminded me a little bit of 1986 at the old stadium when the Browns looked like they were dead and buried against the Jets, and somehow they got back into the game and got it into overtime and ended up winning it in double overtime. But, I mean, this just looked like Seattle had nothing working, you know, and Green Bay had played pretty close to the perfect road game that you would have to play and win in to go into Seattle and combat that crowd and the confidence that the Seahawks have there. And I have to tell you, if you're a member of the Green Bay Packers, that has to be just a devastating loss. I mean, that's one that can hang around in your head for a long time, because that was just amazing. And then
I don't know if you saw this, Jim, their guard Josh Sitton said that he wishes that they never even made the playoffs.
You know, I mean, I tell you, you know, sometimes you hear, like, you know, people say, boy, it would have been better to get blown out than lose it like that. But that is a painful, painful loss that's going to stick in your craw the entire offseason. And it's so hard to get back to that particular game and to be there and have it slip away. I have to tell you, it's got to be amazing for them.
Not only that, Jim, but how bad do you have to feel for, you know, the special teams coach, because of the two letdowns, the fake field goal, and then of course the coach and the player Bostic, for his inability to do his one thing and go get a block to secure that onside kick.
You know, Matt, it reminds me of last year, not this past season, but the year before. You know, in New England, when the Browns looked like they had the Patriots put away, and all they had to do was recover the onside kick, and they didn't, and they gave Tom Brady like 55 seconds to go down the field and beat them, and that's exactly what happened. And, you know, the thing was that they weren't having a – you know, really, technically, they had had, up until the end of the game there, they had had a really good day on special teams. They had caused a fumble on a return, and Crosby had kicked really well in the game and obviously got them into the overtime with a clutch kick. But that is a very, very painful loss. I mean, if you go to the NBA, guys, and I know I'm going off script here a little bit, but, you know, it's like when San Antonio blew that Game 6 against the Heat. You know, and then it just stuck in their craw the whole year. Now, there's two ways you can go with that. It motivated them to come back last year, get home court advantage, and win, and that's exactly what they did. Or you can go the other way, and it's something that can really ruin, you know, a lot of players' lives, or, you know, their thinking or their confidence. I mean, that's a painful loss.
Yeah, no question about it. Very painful one. On the other side, New England just absolutely dominated Indianapolis in their first playoff game. They threw it and didn't run it in this one. They ran it all day long right down the throats of the Colts. And I thought I didn't think the Colts were that good. I think it just goes to show how bad Peyton and the Broncos were at the end of the season. More so than the Colts were so good. But that New England team seems to be very, very tough.
Well, they have so many things, Nathan, that they can do. And, you know, if you're just going to cover them, if you're going to play them and you think they're going to throw the ball a lot, I mean, there's just so many ways that they beat you by throwing the ball, and they have so many guys to cover. And now you got to cover tackles. I mean, it's amazing what they can do. And like you say, you know, they have you guessing as to what the heck they're going to do. I mean, are they going to come out and load up and run? Or are they going to come out and load it up in the other, completely other different way and throw it? And it's just, you know, they really have you guessing. I mean, when Josh Cribbs fumbles that punt, I mean, that's a devastating blow, because they're so difficult to fall behind. I mean, what was so good for Baltimore the week before, and it wasn't good enough, but what was good for them is that they got out in front of the game. But when you fall behind and kind of gift wrap that first score because of fumbling the punt and where he fumbled it, I mean, now you're really behind the eight ball for the rest of the day.
Jim, Nathan and I in the first hour discussed the quarterback-coach combination of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Is this the best quarterback-coach combination? And also, too, even just if you leave Brady out of it, is Bill Belichick in the conversation with one of the greatest NFL football coaches of all time?
Yeah, it seems that way. I mean, I'll tell you, I mean, he has a way, you know, and it seems as though he always had, you know, he doesn't come off what he truly believes in. And even with a lot of public pressure, which is what the situation was with his first head coaching job with the Browns. I mean, there were a lot of people, and there was Bernie Kosar and the factor of, you know, what were you going to do with him? And you know, and then you finally cut him, and you live through that and make the playoffs the next year. You know, and have a pretty good team other than you couldn't beat Pittsburgh. But he's undeterred with what he feels he's going to do and how he's going to get there, no matter all of the outside pressures or the naysayers. So when he decided he was going to go to New England and coach, I mean, you know, he was definitely – he wanted to be there. When he decided he was going to go to Tom Brady and not wait for – even when Drew Bledsoe came back healthy that year, he was going to stick with Tom Brady. It's a great combination. There's total trust between the two of them. And, yeah, I think he is one of the great coaches of all time.
Certainly have to look – certainly looks that way. We were just running through his stats, which are absolutely unbelievable in terms of first in the AFC East every single year since 2003, the lone exception being the year that Brady got hurt in Game 1, and they still went 11-5 with Matt Castle finishing second in their division. So – Pretty much a remarkable run there for Bill Belichick and company out there in New England. Now, we were talking about those games, but we're also got to talk Browns. Offensive coordinator search for the Browns. We've heard a lot of names have come through for the, you know, offensive coordinator position.
Right.
Nobody named OC yet. Kyle Shanahan, by the way, moving on to Atlanta, it sounds like. What do you make of this offensive coordinator situation?
Well, you know, when we talked, I believe the last time I was with you guys, I mean, one of the concerns I had was that you wanted to get a guy and you wanted to get him expediently, you know, because all of a sudden when these teams start hiring head coaches, then these coordinator positions – you know, now you're in there competing against other teams, whereas a lot of teams' attention was trying to find a head coach before they would get a coordinator. You know, the Browns were just looking for a coordinator. And now they're in a, you know, they're in a pool where everyone's, you know, finally naming their head coach and bang, right away. I mean, it's almost like the first move everybody makes is that they team up with an offensive coordinator to come and join the particular guy that they hired to get the head coaching job. So the longer it goes on, I have to be honest with you, Nathan, I'm a little worried, you know, that they're going to get the guy that they want and that they get the right guy to come in here. And you have to wonder if when candidates come in here, the first thing they look at is that quarterback situation. And it says to them, boy, this is going to be a long struggle here. And the quarterback that I may need may not even be here.
Yes, it is very difficult, but on a much more positive note, as we continue to talk Browns, the position group, as we do our position group review, today is talking everything about that defensive backfield. And now, since Dante Whitner is replacing Earl Thomas in the Pro Bowl, three of the four starters here in Cleveland will, of course, be playing in the Pro Bowl. Jim, give us your thoughts on the overall play this year of the defensive backs and how you see it kind of unfolding moving forward as a group of positivity.
Yeah, I think it is a positive group, and it became more positive because of things that weren't so positive. I mean, I think when guys went down injured, like when Kaywan Williams went down injured and Justin Gilbert just wasn't playing for whatever reason, you know, suddenly it forced them, you know, to even go deeper and to find a guy, you know, a guy that they drafted, but a guy that they were really content with redshirting for the entire year in Pierre Desir. But
yep.
When he went out there, he played very, very well. So, I mean, that's even exciting, the fact that they, you know, they were able to get him on the field and see what he could do, and he obviously progressed as the year went along. It is an area of, I think, strength for the team right now. I mean, I think they have one of the great players on the team in Joe Hayden, and he's back there. Whitner really, you know, gave them a very, very solid year, obviously. I mean, Gibson's injury was a problem, but he'll be back, and, you know, and just a – I don't know. There's something about him that he's a playmaker. The ball finds him or he finds the ball, but whatever happens, the end result is very, very good for the defense. You know, I heard your comment about Buster Screen or the caller's comment about Buster Screen, and that's an interesting dilemma right now.
It is.
How much do you pay for Buster, I know every coach that's had Buster, and I've said this to you guys in the past, they've enjoyed thoroughly having him. But there is a ceiling to the price that you want to pay for him, because you still would hold out hope and anticipate that Justin Gilbert's going to be a really good player, hopefully sooner rather than later. And some of these other guys that they find, Robert Nelson, Kaywan Williams, Desir, these guys are all there now. And so it's a position of depth finally for the team, where in the past that hasn't been the case.
What do you how do you see that Buster situation playing out, and what's your kind of take on which way the Browns should be leaning there?
Well, I really love him, and I love the way he plays, and you know, he takes on all comers, you know, and he really does, and he hangs in there, and he really fights the fight all day long. But I still do, Nathan, think that he battles the size problem, and these receivers that he's up against most Sunday afternoons, you know, are much bigger and much, you know, not, I'm not saying much more physical than him, but just because of their size, it's a problem for him. And I think there have been times where he's had to play probably out of position because other guys haven't been able to hold down the other side. And so he's had to go out there and play, you know, the cornerback position alongside Hayden rather than on the inside, where I think a lot of people think that he would excel. I don't think you can pay a ton of money for Buster Screen. I mean, I think that they may have other Buster Screens already on their roster that are much more under their control contractually. But, I mean, as far as the player and the way he plays, I mean, I think any coach would love to have him on the team, and I think these coaches would love to have him stay on the team.
I think that is true. It'll be interesting to see, because if you're Buster Screen, you do have to get paid as well and take advantage of the opportunities that you get out there after a solid season opposite a guy like Joe Hayden. Jim, always good to be with you, and we'll check in with you again next week.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks,
Jim.
All
right, thank you. We're going to wrap things up with some sound from the championship games here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, when we return for our final segment on this Monday.
Tell everybody, go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am.